Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life expired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 38, with myself and today's co-host, Sign Guy. How you doing, Sign Guy? Are you there? Okay, let's try it again. Maybe his microphone's off. Sign Guy!
I'm here, hello. Coach. I'm here.
Oh, there he is. You're just back from RWA at Ocean Shores last night.
Yes, we were over in Ocean Shores for RWA. Great crowd last night.
My goodness, they keep growing and growing, and my goodness, they even got you on a contract over there.
Yes, if you appear at RWA, you are under a contract.
Nice. Any results from the show?
I do have some results from the show. Opening match saw Christopher Ryzik defeat the Black King, Deontay Ford. We had Hellbound, Draven Vargas, and Gregor Petrov defeat Brian Cook in a handicap match. We saw Tobias Tops defeat Tyson Lee by disqualification. And we saw the Rat King defeat Ernest Olsen.
Right on. And do they have a date for their next show?
No date announced. They were shooting for May, but they did not have the date finalized yet.
Okay, yes, we're waiting for our host today, Dave Havoc Hollenbeck. Man, he had an impressive run here in the Northwest. He's still kicking ass here in the Northwest. He's a head trainer down there at UFC Fit. He used to tour with Baby Doll all over the country, and he held titles in pretty much every league in the Northwest here. Do you have any memories of Havoc wrestling?
Many of them. I go back to the old Pinnacle days watching Havoc when they were at the Havoc Haven in Pacific, Washington. So I've known them since then. I worked with them quite a bit at Suquamish Championship Wrestling, Blue Collar Wrestling, Pacific Wrestling Federation, probably several more promotions. He worked some with my teacher at WWE whenever he would do extra duty. So I definitely know Dave Hollenbeck.
Yeah, and it's an honor for myself that I was the one to discover Havoc and Cecil Reed, who started Pinnacle. They both answered my ad in the Tacoma News Tribune for Debashi had a school called The Projects in Tacoma that I helped him train down there. And, it's an honor that both of those guys got into wrestling through me. So I'm really grateful for that.
Now, how long did it take you to realize that Havoc was going to be good coach?
Oh, I knew immediately. Man, he's definitely quite the athlete, and he's very talented, multi-talented, to say the least. Do you have any show notes for shows around the country?
There's a few today. Grindhouse Wrestling at the Arena in Jeffersonville. Derby City Wrestling has its debut show today in Louisville, Kentucky, that featuring Dylan Bostic versus the Pope. We also have Warrior Pro Wrestling in Danville, Indiana, and in Richland, Washington, Reactivate Pro Wrestling today.
Nice. Yeah, they're set to have a great card today. And last night was CPW's Theatrical Wrestling in Arlington, Washington. They crowned a new champion, the Real Talk Tyson, won the Combat Pro Wrestling grappling title. And I guess JB Moonshine seemed like he got screwed out of his title. Did you hear about that?
I heard there was some chicanery between he and Chris Marks, a battle of turnbuckle turmoil. It's always sad when people within the show fight each other, Coach.
It is, you know, my goodness. And then, today we got Turnbuckle Turmoil with Bobby Blaze on, right?
Yes, Bobby Blade will be on the show. I know you're a massive fan of whenever we have someone named Blade on the show. We got Bobby Blade. He goes back easily 30 years within the Kentucky independent wrestling circuit, maybe more than that. Long time standout. He's done pretty much any role you can imagine within professional wrestling in and around Kentucky.
Right on, yeah. And we even had Blade Month not too long ago, and it was very successful. So who knows? The Blades, there's so many Blades out there. My goodness.
There are a lot of Blades out there. We didn't scratch the surface remotely when we had Blade Month.
And then, hey, let's give a plug out to Pawcade coming up.
Pawcade on April 15th in New Albany, Indiana. Doors open at 12, bell time at 1 o'clock at the brewery there, the Perpetual House of Hops, I believe the name of the brewery. Half the money going to the Humane Society there in Scott County, Indiana. Half of the money going to the family of Sean Patrick O'Brien, who we lost last week very, very suddenly.
Okay, and then I just got a word from Havoc. He's at a function right now, and he says that he still will be able to come on in a couple more minutes. He's just finishing up his last event he was at, and we'll hear from him soon. And then also you got Northwest Pro coming up April 8th. There's a rumor that Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan might have a seminar that day.
I don't know if that's going to end up happening or not due to scheduling. We're working on hopefully getting something at some point, but still all in the discussion stage right now, trying to coordinate schedules.
Okay, and let's give our plugs. I see you just did a Sign of the Times, another entertaining Sign of the Times. So tell everybody how to get a hold of you and what you got going on there.
You can follow me on the Book of Faces. You can go to @SignGuyHPW on the Twitters, over on the Gram. You can follow Chicken Bob on all the social medias. He's a very social media-friendly chicken. You can look up The Sign of the Times, episode 573, over on the YouTubes, TheSignGuy77. Hopefully you will subscribe. Otherwise, Stompin' Steve gets a nervous stomach and a sneezy head.
He does, and you got quite the content on there. You've got reviews of the first couple original Star Trek seasons, and then on to the next generation also. Tell the fans about that.
That one, a side channel I'm doing. I'm in season 2 of The Next Generation. It's been a little bit slow going because that was a tough season to watch. but I should have a new episode tonight on that. I am up to the episode The Contagion. So I'll be reviewing that later today. And then also today, Chicken Bob and I very trepidatiously will be making our way down to Tacoma. We're going to swing by the brand new Debashi Market and get some coffee.
Well, hey, that sounds like a fun time. I might have to do that myself. Have we heard from QT lately?
I saw QT last week. I handed him a copy of The Duchess of German Street. He and Kurt Frazier is going to do dueling book reports when they're finished reading. They each have a copy now.
All right, cool. Yeah, Debashi store, Debashi Market down there in Tacoma, it's been reopening. They already had a soft opening, and you guys should check out their coffee also. Tell them about their coffee.
Debashi has his own coffee line. Apparently, it was inspired by me when we were talking coffee, and Debashi, of course, very proud of Yemen being potentially the country that discovered coffee, and he decided to come up with his own coffee brand, which he does, and now that is the exclusive coffee you will find at his market, both as far as ground, bean, or freshly brewed.
Nice. Okay, while we wait for our host, Havoc, you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the coach with the most. Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews from celebrities all over the world. Also, if you need any work down here in the Northwest, no job too big or small, contact A-Plus Payless Handyman Services for all your needs. They're 10% cheaper than any written estimate and 15% cheaper for militaries and seniors. And they are licensed, insured, and bonded general contractors that can build your house from ground up. All right. And then next week, April Fool's Day, we have Antonio DeFarino on next week. Let the fans know about him.
He is a production guy. He does a lot of work for a lot of the larger independents that come through the Michigan area, such as Game Changer Wrestling and promotions like that. Does a lot of the independents that are in and around the Detroit area, so people like Pro Wrestling All-Stars and companies like that. He's on the other side of the curtain as far as being with the companies, but he's sort of in a role a lot of fans may not see when they're watching wrestling, but it's definitely going to affect what they see. So it's going to be a very fascinating time with him. I don't think we get a lot of production people on the Coach Mike Jones show, do we?
Not really. And then here he is, our guest for today, Havoc. How you doing, brother?
Great. I was sorry I was late getting a phone call, and I had to I was at a celebration of life. One of my my ex-wife's family members passed away recently from cancer, so we're just finishing that up. But other than that, everything's good.
Okay, nice. I got my today's co-host, Sign Guy, on today. I'm sure you're familiar with him. Sign Guy, give him the first time question, please.
Yeah. Wow. Good to talk to you, Mr. Hollenbeck. I guess since...
It's been a long time.
It's been a bit, yeah. I guess my first question I'll throw out there, Coach likes to do the first timer question when people do his show for the first time. What led to you getting into professional wrestling? Coach already talked about how he helped train you. What led you into wanting to be in pro wrestling?
Go ahead. Oh, I was a huge fan as a kid. I always wanted to be a pro wrestler, but as a kid, I just wanted to be a, what would you call it, a tough guy, right? I wanted to be somebody that was, I wanted to be a ninja. I wanted to be, I know it's funny, but like when I was a kid, like that was the big thing.
You're breaking up. Are you there still?
Oh, I think we lost Havoc.
No, I think I'm back.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, there you go. All right,
yeah,
cool.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. So
no problem.
I just wanted to be this, I just wanted to be like this, I guess, tough guy, macho guy that that could take care of himself. All the movies that were like, they had all sorts of martial arts movies, so I was always into martial arts as a kid. My dad, he went to Japan and was in the military and learned judo. And so I was, as a kid, I learned judo up until the age of about 10 when my parents split up. And then he stayed in New York. My mom moved out here to the Tacoma area. That's where she's from Seattle, but moved out here to Tacoma. And I ended up getting into wrestling, like amateur wrestling, because my dad said, since you can't do judo, you got to do something. So I did amateur wrestling. And then that's how I started. And then I fell in love with watching, like, Dusty Rhodes. And I was a big Dusty Rhodes NWA fan. I wasn't as big a WWE fan. You guys still there?
Yes, okay. Yeah, we're listening.
Go ahead.
And then,
next question. That was kind
of... Okay, so who were some of your, you mentioned Dusty Rhodes, but who else were some of your heroes growing up, whether it was sports, music, wrestling, and ordinary life, or all the above?
Okay, so I'm going to go with, like, as in, like, favorite, like, movie actor would have been, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme. I liked him because as a kid, I liked Bloodsport. I liked any of the movies that he was in. Like, I was just, like, I was obsessed with those kind of movies. But, wrestling-wise, Great Muta, Dusty Rhodes. The reason why I like Dusty Rhodes is because I had a huge, what would you call it? Like, I love the Bunkhouse Stampede matches where they kind of wore what they wanted to wear and they were inside of a cage. And, like, the early the Bunkhouse Stampede matches, I don't know if most of you guys remember that, but those matches, like, captivated me.
All right, nice. Yes, definitely. All right, Sine, what's your next question? Or were you, did you still have some more?
Yeah.
Oh, I could,
no.
I mean, like,
now, we know that you eventually went on to train a lot of the people here in the Northwest. There's a large group of guys that you were involved in their training in their early careers. Out of all those guys that you trained, who do you think most surpassed your expectations from them from the first day of training to where they eventually got?
I have a list of guys. I can't pick one because it's like picking your favorite kids. You can't do that, right? I can't. I'm gonna go with Christopher Isaac. I never, like, when I first met the guy, I knew that he had a charisma, but I didn't know, like, how long he would be doing. He's still doing it. And then you got Azul Angel, which became Ethan HD. He was like a son to me. I was, like, at his wedding. I was one of his best men at his wedding. But he became super good at wrestling. I'm so proud of him. Flex Walker, another one. Our Flex, Malcolm Flex, I think is what he goes by now. Will Evans. Those guys all are still, like, a lot of these guys are still doing it. But then you got, like, guys like Bolo. He was Aaron Bolo, Aaron Schroffenegel. He, amazing. But, you know, just how far that they came so fast. We took off very fast. Like, these guys were, you know, entered school. Within a year, they're wrestling in all the top matches and on all the companies that they work for. And this day, you know, like, I think that that's one of the most proud things that I am about wrestling is that I was able to – my hand is on at least 100 wrestlers around the – you know, that are wrestling around the area. And, you know, it comes from my teachers. Like, you were one of my teachers. Dave DeBoschi was one of my teachers. You know, you got Michelle Starr up in Canada. And then – then, you know, people that you wouldn't necessarily say was a teacher, but somebody that was, like, on the road with you or somebody that you just learned from. There's so many people that made who I became. Okay, I didn't make who I became. The atmosphere made who I became. in wrestling. Sorry, guys, that was long-winded. Yeah.
No, it's all good. We got plenty of time. So, yeah, what a blessing, you know. And tell the fans what you played sports in high school and growing up and your self-defense background.
Okay, yeah. Well, I started as, you know, I played flag football. It was the very first sport I ever played. But I did martial arts with my dad, as in judo. I learned how to throw people and stuff. And at the age of, I think, I want to say 5 or 6 is when I first started and I actually put on a judo gi. And I actually was throwing kids about were my size. And then when my parents split up, which was, that's a big void for a kid that, like, you know, he kind of idolized his dad. His dad was like a teacher at a judo gym. So I always kind of, I think in the back of my mind, I always wanted to be that. And I kind of did later on. But then I, you know, like I said, I played flag football. And then I played football in junior high and high school. I also wrestled. I got to wrestle against a lot of really tough guys, like guys that end up going into the UFC. Like I got to wrestle against, trying to think of some of the guys that you guys would know of, like people that I had wrestled. I wrestled against guys Jens Pulver and some of these guys that were wrestling as a young. Go ahead.
What about Mighty Mouse? He was a local too.
He was actually I coached at Washington High School. I think the year before he came in, but I knew him from back. I knew him before he was ever in the UFC. And now my son trains with him. My son Cole, they do jiu-jitsu at Sumner Grapple Club every Tuesday. If you want to go down and meet and train at Grapple Club, my son Cole, who just had his first MMA fight, is training with Mighty Mouse. Now, it's kind of odd, right?
Yeah, right on.
They're both
all right. And
they're both the same size, like, but Cole's taller by about almost a foot. Cole's six. My son's 6'1". I was only 5'9". I wasn't a big guy, but and Mighty Mouse is probably like 5'2" or 5'3".
Nice. Okay. Sign.
One of the things you have done in your career is you've been able to go to WWE and work on shows, some of them on the televised broadcast, some of them not. But for people listening that are in the business and they don't know how to go about even being considered, can you tell the people what it took for you to be able to get booked on those shows and be able to do work for WWE?
I think there's a couple things that you need to do. I would say, you know what, believe in yourself and go and put your name out there and give it to WWE, because they have, you can go through, there's channels, I think, if you go to their website or their, I think it's their academy or something, you can submit your resume. And that's all I did. And I think I had people that helped me out. I think that Sign Guy actually talked to a friend, what's his name again? Sign Guy, I'm drawing a blank. Yeah, Ayers. I think maybe that helped me get on. You know, have a background. Build a base of what you're about. Don't just be a pro wrestler. You have to have a background in amateur sport or something that you're – jiu-jitsu and wrestling and judo, and they're a very good base to build who you're going to be later on. Because, you know, if you're just a gimmick, say I just dress up and I'm some kind of monster, right? Those guys usually don't – unless they're very, very you know, gifted and talented and very they just stand out and they're very aggressive and they're very – there's a lot of things that go into making a guy. If you want to be and I can't imagine not being involved in wrestling and not trying to go for that. I want to be in the main event, not because of an ego thing. It's just I've always had this drive to – I want to be where my goal is, and my goal is not to be in the mid-card. So don't try to pick a gimmick – that is not going to just base you in the mid-card. And I think that having a background in martial arts or boxing, wrestling, a sambo would be awesome. You don't see too many guys with a sambo background in wrestling. That would be great for, like, a Russian character. But you want to build your base and your who you are so that it's easy to explain to the fans. They want to see somebody that is a tough guy. They don't want to see just somebody that dresses up in tights and goes out there and does a bunch of flashy moves. They want a story from your past that makes who you are today. Does that make sense?
That does make
exactly,
a lot of sense.
You know? Yeah, and then you've had an impressive run as an MMA instructor. You had your own school over there in New York for a while, and then your head trainer
yeah.
at UFC Fit. Tell us a little bit about your martial arts background and your – yeah.
Well, let's start with, like I said, I wanted to be this person that people – like, I wanted to be the Yoda of martial arts as a kid. Like, I wanted to be somebody that people would come to. Like, I have police coming to me for training. I have I just taught at – it's called the Dominator training for police. We had police from all over the state of Washington that came in and trained with me and about six other. I was guest trainer. They actually – the police came to me and asked me to be one of their trainers. And so it's weird how things kind of go round and round. But so I got into jiu-jitsu back – actually, my very first day on a jiu-jitsu mat was in 1998. I went to Marcelo Alondo's school, and then I trained there for – maybe 2 months, and then I think he got deported for his paperwork wasn't ready for him to be in America full-time, something like that. And then I ended up going to a couple other places. I went to a place called Game Bread. It was in Spanaway, Washington. I trained out of a storage garage there. You know, speaking of, you know, same thing with one of my pro wrestling trainings was in a storage garage. But
yeah,
I think that
yeah.
pro wrestling and wrestling is awesome. Is also a martial art, but so as I progressed in jiu-jitsu, as a blue belt, I became the kids coach, right? So I'm already coaching as a blue belt. So then my purple belt comes, and then I opened my own academy in Spanaway, Parkland area. And because I did this from a very early age in my training, that I was always a teacher, even when, you know, as I was going through, so I was kids coach, then I opened up my own gym as a purple belt, and then as a brown belt, I had my own academy. And then when I got my black belt, I got to skip ahead like one spot. Instead of just being a coach as a black belt, I was a professor. So I'm a professor in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because of my lengthy training, because I've always been a teacher since basically almost, you know, I've been in it. I was always like helping the kids, then the adults, and then now. And then after all that, after I had my own place, you know, COVID came in, and we've had some issues that that happened with me personally that I ended up having to close my gym. And then the UFC, they were open for about a year, and they decided that they wanted to have a jiu-jitsu there. And they came and asked me to be their instructor. I never applied for that job. The people that were involved, my friend Jan McCain, who runs Summit Grappling, Sumner Grapple Club, he got me basically the job there by telling them to get a hold of me. Next thing you know, I'm working for the UFC. And now I have one of the most successful jiu-jitsu academies in the whole state. We have, like, one of the best facilities for jiu-jitsu because the UFC is holds no expense. And I have over 200 students that are in our program. I have about, I think, 80 kids and about another 120 adults.
Cool. What a blessing.
And, yeah, it's amazing. And then, I mean, that's not talking. And then we get, the proof is in the pudding, you know, like I always say that whenever my kids ask me, you know, like, how do you know? I was like, it's there. My daughter, my oldest daughter, she was a top level wrestler in the state of Washington, now wrestles in college. My son, Cole, top level wrestler in the state, in the top three. When he's in high school, and now he's done MMA. My youngest son, Caden, it just took third in state for Washington in the hardest weight bracket. So the kid that beat him by like 2 or 3 points, and he's a 2-time state champion. And then Caden had to go in the back door and win to get. He has to win the most amount of matches in that tournament to get third, because the number one guy put him out in the first or. Not put him out, but put him in the loser's bracket, so he had to come back, what they call it. So why I'm saying all that is because my proof that I can make good athletes, I had when I was coaching in wrestling, I took 18 kids to the state my very first year. It's unheard of. I took fifth in the whole state of Washington my very first year coaching. My kids have done very well. And if you look at my students from wrestling, they've all done very well. So I'm either the most lucky, crappy coach or at least a decent coach.
That's no, you're pretty awesome. Pretty awesome, brother. What a blessing.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good life.
Sign?
Now, here's something I don't think I've ever asked you before. Pinnacle Wrestling, when it was first running and you were wrestling there regularly, had a building in Pacific called the Havoc Haven. Was that in direct reference to you, or was that sort of a coincidence?
I didn't name that because that would sound almost egotistical if I named my school the Havoc Haven, but my partner and my students at the time, because I opened up my own school almost out of spite. I opened it because I was mad at wrestling for a while because there was a lot of political stuff that happened in my wrestling career with I was wrestling in Canada a lot, and I felt like there was a lot of guys there that they kind of took care of their own. You know, these Canadian guys that didn't. I'm not trying to bag on any Canadian guys. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, I'm driving 4 hours to get through their show. They live there, and they're buddies. I'm the outside guy that the promoter's trying to push in these upper matches. And I'll just give you one, for instance, that really pissed me off. And it wasn't – I'm not blaming anybody, but this pissed me off. I'm wrestling as the babyface, the most over guy on the card for that time, I think, one of the most. I'm wrestling a guy named Asian Cougar and another guy named Tony Kazina. They have worked out the match before I even get there, so I don't really get a say because I don't want to – I'm the low man on the totem pole, but I'm the most over there. Asian Cougar, nobody knows who he is really in Canada at the time. Like, he's just coming over from my understanding, like, when I wrestled, like, guys like Steve Corino, the promoter wanted Steve Corino to go over, and he's like, why would you put me over your guy? Why don't you make a star out of your guy? My thought was the same thing. It's like, if Asian Cougar's coming in from Japan and they're only going to bring him in, you know, once every few months, why put him over? So I ended up in this three-way dance in the finals. I'm in there for 51 seconds, and then Tony Kazina and Asian Cougar go on to have the match, which the crowd was definitely behind me the most at that time because I was in the hottest tag team. We were tag team champions, me and Chance Beckett. So out of spite, after I decided, you know what, I'm tired of driving up here and dealing with, you know, people that really, guys that didn't really want me on the card because I wasn't Canadian. And I wasn't one of the, I didn't hang out with the wrestlers. I just went there and did my job. I didn't play the politics. You can ask Mike or anybody that I've worked for. I've never been friends with the promoter and ask for favors. So if you're going to book me and it's not fun, I'm going to leave. And that's what I did. I left ECCW because I felt like I was being, I don't want to say like, pushed out, but I wasn't as welcome as I once was there when I first came in. And I ended up opening up Pinnacle Wrestling. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. You're still rolling.
Go ahead, Mike. Oh, I was just saying that I opened up Pinnacle Wrestling out of almost – I felt like I had more to offer, and I kind of want them to see that I was a good wrestler.
You're breaking up for a second.
I'm not bagging on anybody that was training guys. What I'm saying is that I just think that I could do a good enough job that I could start my own promotion. It's not rocket science. It's once you're in it. When you understand the business, if you're a halfway smart guy, you can be successful in it. And my plan was to build my promotion off my students, not bring people in to build them up. What I was trying to do was build up the pinnacle guys that I was bringing up. I would have never put anybody over my guys unless it was important for a storyline. Not because I want these guys to have egos, but my crowd, half of my crowd at the time was family and friends of the wrestlers, right? Why would you piss them off intentionally and just basically bury your own talent? And that's what happened at the end of Pinnacles, that we started burying our own talent because I wasn't in charge anymore. They ended up getting advice from other people. And as you see, we're thriving for a while, but when I left, the company kind of fizzled out. And I'm not saying it's directly all because of me, but they didn't understand what my plan was. My plan was to build stars in our company and make them the attraction and not the outside guys that nobody's coming in. Like, we brought in guys like, and I love Juggernaut, but he only brought maybe three people that were from the area that were going to come to the show. But Laramie Lexo or Bolo are bringing in, you know, their whole entire family. Does that make sense?
For sure. Yes, definitely. You know, and you had an impressive run. You got some victories against Steve Corino, Brian Danielson, Jack Evans. What were some of your most memorable matches you've seen or been involved with?
My biggest feud has to be Tony Cazzina. Me and him, I think to this day, like, we've had our ups and downs. I don't know if we never really had anything personally, like, where we didn't like each other. But I think that maybe he felt certain ways about me or whatever. But I've wrestled him more than anybody else. And right as my career was coming to an end, when I was 41, me and him had one more match in Portland, and it was awesome just to wrestle him again. And, you know, because there was some, I don't know if there was heat with me and him, but there was definitely some animosity because he was one of the guys that was in that locker room when Pinnacle fell that I was making things difficult because they were in my my buddy that was my partner's ear. And they were driving a wedge between me and him. And, you know, he had Cecil wanting to do things his way. And God bless Cecil, but he really didn't know shit about the business.
Yeah.
No,
wow.
He just knew how to...
Yeah, what about...
He knew how to open his wallet and give money to these guys, but he didn't understand why we were doing things. Or he didn't understand what I was doing because he got a big head real fast and thought that he actually would say things like this to... One of the students, they were going to a Home Depot. He's like, you know, I'm the most important guy in here. And I knew at that point that this was a sinking ship because Cecil was out of control.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah,
guys.
And then what about some of the most memorable matches you've seen in your life?
Oh, memorable matches that I've seen in my life. You know, let's see. In the Pacific Northwest, I would say, you know, I love watching Dr. Luther wrestle. I love watching, Playboy Buddy Rose. Like, guys that were – I was always fascinated by the guys that were, like, towards the top of the card. I wanted to see where they were taking the match, not even so much that they were in a big storyline, but I just wanted to see where that match was going to go with the guys that were considered the top guys. Like, who would be another guy that – Jason Sullivan, he was in charge of a company, but he also was, he learned from Buddy Rose, and you could see how he would make things happen that were magic in the ring. Not so much because he was a greatly gifted wrestler, but he would make sure that things went a certain way. Like, one time, I just came back from New York. I had been gone for 3 years, I think. And I get there, and he stops me at the curtain before I'm about to go out, and he says, let the music play for another, you know, 20, 30 seconds. Make them beg you to come out. And I thought, you know, his brain was very good for wrestling. Jason Sullivan, I appreciate him very much, and I had really good matches with him, and we always kind of clicked. So you don't get always like me and Tony clicked athletically. Me and Jason clicked in a way where we both understood what we needed to do to make this match really mean something.
Yeah, sweet, man.
We talked a little bit about the training school and some of the guys you trained. When you were training guys to wrestle, what was your mindset as far as what guys needed to do to be successful? What were you trying to train them both physically for the moves in the ring, but also to be able to be successful as a professional and advance in the business?
Okay, first and foremost, safety was my biggest concern. I wanted the guys to know how to bump well, take care of themselves, fall right, just be safe with their opponent, taking care of each other. Those are the most important things. Because guess what? You can't teach psychology in a year. Guys don't even know what they don't know getting into the business. Like, if I try to teach psychology, no one should ever teach psychology in the first year of pro wrestling training. It should be all safety and being a good mechanic in the ring. Like, you need to be – do you know what I mean by a mechanic?
Yeah.
You need to be able – I'll explain it in my own terms. A mechanic is somebody that can just – is technically able to do 90% of the things that he's going to be asked to do. Front flip, back, maybe backflip, land on your back safely, land on your side safely, land on your upper shoulder safely. There's a bunch of ways that you and then when you put somebody down, are you putting them down right? Just being a good tactician in the ring mechanically, not because the storylines, the character, that's all going to come much later. First of all, you're a jabroni. Everybody's a jabroni when they first get in. They don't know shit. They don't even know what they don't know. So it would be like trying to talk to your dog at first. They don't know. They have to see it. They have to go out there and understand it. They have to know these guys have no idea what to expect the first time the bell rings. Am I going to get shot? Am I going to try to kick my ass? Are they going to give me anything? Are they going to let me pick any kind of move? And most of the time, you're not going to get to do shit. So if I spend $6 psychology for something that they're not even going to get to do, it's going to be even more frustrating for them. Go ahead.
We're having trouble with the audio right now. Maybe you're in a bad spot.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
It's a little better. It's breaking up, though.
Yeah, that's weird. Maybe I'm in a bad area. I'm driving right now. Is that getting any better?
Okay.
Is that getting any better?
It's a little better.
I just think that training psychology your first year or two in is pointless because there's so much to learn mechanically before you learn anything. How to tell a story in the ring, how to do all this stuff. Because most of the time, you're not even going to get a chance to do that. I would love to see that. Like, my very first match with Jerry Morrow. I went out there and he beat me in like, I think he fought like 2 minutes. You're not going to get a bunch of shit in it until you become, until the promotion says they need you on the card or they want you on the card. You're basically begging for a job your first few shows until they even see that they want to use you.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and then you've had an impressive run. You had Baby Doll as your manager and you toured across America. Can you tell the fans a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was working for Jeff Manning down in, Salem, Oregon. And he got me booked on some card out there where it was like a big show. Jim Cornette was on it, Baby Doll. And her daughter and her watched me wrestle. And they're like, hey, we really like how you wrestle. Have you ever thought about coming out to, like, South Carolina and down to Tennessee and all these other places? And I ended up wrestling, like, a lot of, like, pretty famous guys on that, you know, that southern East Coast wrestling scene. Guys like Phil Shatter became Gunner in WWE. And that's just some of the guys that, I mean, one of the guys, but I wrestle a lot. I can't even think of all their names. But she ended up managing me because she got me involved, and then she wanted to work too. So it kind of worked that, you know, she got to work. She had to be a manager, and she had somebody to manage that was a decent wrestler. You know, I think that that's how it worked out. And when I came back to the, after being in New York, I came back and she was my manager a couple times out here on the West Coast. I think twice. Is that right? Twice out here when I was.
Okay.
And then things just kind of fizzled out with that, and I ended up doing other things. I ended up wrestling, I think, every weekend for a while when I came back down in Portland. Was it Saturday or Sunday? I would wrestle every weekend for, I think, like 2 or 3 years.
Right on.
But yeah, I learned so much. I got to work against, like, I didn't wrestle him, but Tully Blanchard was managing Phil Shatter, and Baby Doll was managing me. It was like I got to learn a lot and talk to these people. Like, I was on the phone with, Dusty Rhodes, and I met Magnum TA, and I got them to watch my match against when I was wrestling a guy named Damian Wayne, I think his name was. And we were in the semifinals of this tournament. Yeah, we were wrestling in the semifinals of this tournament, and, I got to be on the card with Ricky Morton, and, like, it's just kind of weird how these things kind of happen. But, I hope you guys ask me one question, I'll just throw it out there. Ask me how I got back into WWE after being gone from even being on that show, I think it was 15 years. 2002, I think, is when I wrestled for them. Or maybe 2003. It was right around there. It was early 2000s.
Okay, how did you do it?
My kids were like, why don't you try to get into WWE one more time? I'm like, I'm too old. Like, just do it. And I was like, because one of their friends thought it would be cool. And I just sent out who I'd been training with and what I'd been doing. And, I had my jiu-jitsu instructor, Mark Schultz, which is Olympic gold medalist. I think some of these things helped me. At least, I felt like it didn't hurt me having them as my trainer, because Kurt Angle was on the first show. The funny thing is the first show that I wrestled on, and when I came back, I wrestled in the year 2019. I wrestled for WWE, or I worked for them at least 7 times that year. I went out to Florida. I worked in Portland. I went to Washington a couple times when they came out. Every time they came out, they were using me for something. But Kurt Angle met me there, and his trainer that trained him for the Olympics was my trainer. So I don't know if those kind of things helped out, but I put that on my application that, Mark Schultz is my, I was about to be a black belt. I was a brown belt at the time in jiu-jitsu. I think those things helped me get in, but it was just on a whim. I was wrestling again, but my kids were like, why don't you try to really make it? You're wrestling around here. You're doing the same thing. You're kind of just spinning your wheels in the same area. You're in the main event, wherever you're wrestling. Why don't you just try it? Just do it. And I did, and next thing you know, I was wrestling for them again. And I got used on TV again. And I got used pretty well. They didn't, have me get squashed. I actually got some offense in and had a decent match with Humberto. The language barrier was very tough, though. Yeah, that was hard because, he called something in the match, and I didn't know what he said. But it was fun. I got to wrestle. I got to, at 43 years old, I'm wrestling for WWE again. That was weird. And, they said, Vince and them came by during my match and said, you're in the 1 percentile that we ever use after their 40s on TV.
Dang. So, anyway. Wow. What a blessing. My goodness. Fine.
When you look at the landscape of professional wrestling today, there's a lot more places to go to do wrestling full-time. You have AEW, you have Impact, you have WWE, you have New Japan, AAA, all of these places that weren't really options 10, 15 years ago have popped up over the last few years. Do you think that there's still a chance you might go full-time into wrestling at a national level somewhere?
I don't think that. I mean, I know that they're using guys. The thing is, like, I'm pretty happy right now. I'm getting to do what I want to do. I mean, I still love wrestling. I still think it's the best art form that's ever existed. I love entertaining the fans. I miss it. I don't miss the politics. I don't miss the fake friends. I don't miss that part. I do miss being in front of the crowd. And, you know, I would do crazy things. Like, when I was a bad guy, I was a real bad guy. I tried to make them hate me. I would play shitty music and put earmuffs over my ears, like big, like the ones that you wear, like the shooting range over my ears, and make the crowd listen to the crappiest music that I could. I would think of ways just to piss them off. It was fun. When I was a good guy, I tried to make them feel who I was and what was happening to me in the ring. Like, you know, if I'm getting beat up, I wanted them to feel that I was getting beat up. I didn't, or that I was fighting for them. I don't know if that makes sense, but was my concept, is that I wanted them to feel my match, not just watch my match.
Definitely. So who were some of your favorite people to work?
Me and him probably didn't have great matches, but my good friend Corey, you guys know who Corey is.
Yeah, Sonny O'Mara.
Yeah, he was one of my students, too. You know, he was a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under me. We became really good friends for the last probably, from, 2016 to 2020 when he passed away. Whew, that was rough. He had a stroke and couldn't talk, for anybody that didn't know Sonny. So for 10 years, he wasn't able to talk, but still wrestled. And, I mean, Sonny, I wouldn't say was the greatest technical wrestler, big, strong guy when he was at his prime. But it was fun to wrestle him because we were friends, you know. Smashed his face.
Nice. Any other favorites?
In the middle of the ropes, and he decided. Any other favorites?
Oh,
yeah,
excuse me.
I have Tony Kazina was always a good match, a fun athletic match. You know, one guy that I think that where there was money left on the table where we could have made Richards would have had great matches.
You're breaking up. Sign, are you there?
I'm here.
Dave, we lost you. Let me see. Let me check the studio. He's still on. Must be going through a rough patch. Yep, you're talking about your favorite still. So, Dave, oh, we lost him. Okay, hopefully he's going to call back in. And, I know we're about to wrap this up here pretty soon because we got our next show coming up on Turnbuckle at 1 o'clock Pacific. Hopefully Dave calls back in. There he is. Okay. All right.
Sorry, guys.
It's all good.
You
were talking about your favorites. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I said, I think that there would be some money on the table for me and Davey Richards to wrestle each other. I think that that would be a match that I would still like to do. I've always wanted to wrestle Scotty Mack. I think that because we are tag team partners, I think that that would be a fun match for the fans because there's a story there. Those would be reasons I would come back, I think.
Okay, sign.
Now, you worked with a lot of people in the business, not just wrestlers, but obviously ring announcers, timekeepers, referees, the production people, the ring crew. You know how valuable a lot of those people are. Who are some of the guys out there that you work with that weren't necessarily in the ring wrestling, but were vital components to the shows that you did?
oh, God, there's so many people. I mean, like, every person has, I mean, from the ticket collector to the person taking the pictures, they're all very important to the show. You know, guys like, do you guys know who Jeff Manning is?
Yeah.
Yes.
He helped me with a part of me that I had the hardest time with. I still probably am not a very good, interview. I think I've gotten better. But he made me do it. Like, he wouldn't let, like, I could avoid it sometimes with some of the other promoters, like, because my wrestling was pretty good. But he pushed me out there to go and talk and be, he always made me talk at this, you know, as much as he could get me to talk. And I thank him for that because it helped me become better as a performer. Mike Jones was there. You know, he helped me. You know, we traveled together. Going to shows helped me get on shows. Like, there's guys, even everybody that's has ever came in contact with me, I appreciate everything that he did, you know. We've had so many people pass away recently. You know, Dan Klosser, I got to, you know, he made me the booker of his promotion. I can't not thank that guy. He just passed away recently. You guys still there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just going to kind of go over people. You know, even me and Cecil Reed, we had our falling out, but that helped me start Pinnacle. I'm sure Sign Guy had something to do with helping me get on WWE with talking to Ayers. There's so many people that, you know, have you ever heard it takes a village to raise a child?
Yes.
For
sure.
There's so many people in my village that helped me get to where I was going, and none of them necessarily were family members. Like, I bet you most people, the only family that they met of mine was probably my kids. They didn't, you know, like, and, you know, the wrestlers and the people on the card that I was working with became my family, if that makes sense. They helped me get to where I got. There would be no Havoc, there would be no Dave Hollenbeck, there would be no nothing without, someone has to, you know, give you a hand to get you on a show. Somebody has to say, this guy's good, or they seen you wrestle. Somebody had to believe in whatever I was doing in that ring to make me who I was. Somebody felt like they could put me in a main event. Does that make sense?
It does, and that's definitely a blessing, you know. And this next segment is called Favorites. Tell the fans what your favorite coffee to drink is.
Starbucks hot mocha.
Nice. Okay. What's your favorite concert you've seen?
Favorite concert?
Yes.
Let's see. Concert. Favorite concert that I've seen. And personally?
Yes.
In person? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
In person? Well, there's a band called In This Moment. I actually used their one of their songs for a while, called Adrenalize. But I got to bodyguard the lead singer because she had some death threats and stuff at the Puyallup Fair. I was in charge of kind of being their security. And so I would say that was probably the coolest concert that I've ever seen, because if you ever seen this band, you would know why. In This Moment.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Nice. And then what are your favorite sports teams?
Oh, I used to be the hugest Seahawks fan. I just kind of gave up on sports in the last few years because they got so politicized. Can't stand that. I don't want my sports with politics. I want to be able to go and watch a sport and not be reminded of all the bullshit that's going on in the world. I think that's caused a lot of problems in my life. It caused a lot of problems in my life because I spoke up on some things. But
oh, goodness, I know. But, you know, it's nice to see that how everything's turned full circle, you know. And we're getting low on time here. Sign, do you have any more questions?
not really any more questions. I just want to say it's always a pleasure, and hopefully we will cross paths some point in the very near future.
Yeah, and you know, if you guys ever get a chance to book a show or anything, my sons they would be very good. What would you call it? Draws. Like my son's one of the biggest draws. He drew like 100 and something people plus at the muscle shoot. His very first fight that came just to see him.
Wow.
If you guys are, and they've been trained. You know, they've been trained. They know how to do everything. They probably need to get in there and run some ropes a little bit, but other than that, they know about everything about pro wrestling. So if you're ever looking to for some new guys, my two sons would be a good fit for any promotion in the area.
Exactly. I'd say the same thing, you know. And, man, those guys are really talented. Your whole family is. What a blessing. And then what do you got coming up, Dave?
Well, I got this next month we have the Revolution. I'll be coaching kids and adults at the Revolution tournament at the Puyallup Fairgrounds. They're doing a jiu-jitsu tournament there. My son has a fight, I think, on April 22nd. I have a bunch of seminars. I have Hoyler Gracie coming in June at the UFC Fit in Puyallup. And if you're ever interested in doing jiu-jitsu, come talk to the staff there. We have one of the biggest growing jiu-jitsu communities at the UFC Fit right now. We take people all ages and all abilities. It doesn't matter what you look like and size-wise. Never too late, and it's never too you're never too far out of shape to try jiu-jitsu. It's for everybody.
Definitely, and that's a very impressive facility down there. How do people get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me. You can give out my phone number here if you want, or you can just contact the UFC Fit in Puyallup. Just Google UFC Fit. I'm trying to think of anything else that just mostly that's about it right now.
What about your social media?
Go ahead.
Your social media.
I usually just, if anybody wants to contact me on social media, just go to, Dave Hollenbeck at Dave Hollenbeck. Can look me up. I have a couple on there. I try to stay away from social media other than just posting pictures of my jiu-jitsu stuff now. Social media will come and get you.
Yeah, exactly. Man, Dave, we really appreciate you and all you've done for wrestling and MMA and martial arts and self-defense in the Northwest here and around the world. And we wish you all the luck in the world, man. We really appreciate your time and for this interview. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys. And I just want to say thank you. And you guys have always treated me very, very well. Mike, Stein guy, is there anybody else that's involved in this that I know? I just know of you two right now that's on here. Is there anybody else on there that I know?
This is just my show, and Sign Guy usually helps me co-host. And
awesome.
Sign Guy helped me get this show started, so big shout-out to Sign Guy. Really appreciate you. Thank you, Sign.
My pleasure, Coach. Always happy to help you out.
Hey, Dave, is there anything else you'd like to plug or promote?
No, I'm good, man. I just like to plug this show now, plug you guys. I would like to say, hey, you guys, check this out. If there's ever any other kind of things that you guys want to talk about, I'm always free. Anybody wants to get a hold of me, contact Mike. He'll get a hold of me. And Sign Guy,
definitely.
Thanks again for everything that you do. And Mike, thanks for getting me in the business. It's been a very fun ride.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's been an honor.
You guys have a great day and be blessed.
Yes, it is blessed to be in the Northwest. A beautiful day today. Thank you so much. All right, everyone. There he was, Dave Hollenbeck, the one and only Havoc. Thank you so much. And Sign, is there anything else you'd like to plug or promote? You're welcome.
I did most of that earlier, but In 55 minutes, we're going to have Bobby Blade on the show for Turnbuckle Turmoil. Looking forward to that. He and I have not crossed paths in many years. We go back to the UWF in Georgetown, Kentucky, and Pro Wrestling Freedom in Corbin, Kentucky. Looking forward to having him on the show. Coach, I know you love people named Blade. Going to be a good one.
Definitely, especially Johnny Blade. He's my favorite. And there's even a couple of them, right?
There's several Johnny Blades in this business.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll be back on Turnbuckle here shortly. We appreciate you guys. Thank you for all your love and support and feedback. Thanks so much. Thanks, Sign. Thanks, Dave. And we'll see you next week.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, undiagnosed. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most. Coach Mike Jones.